learn to cry and express your feelings. Also, if you want anything in life, if you want to have the life that you've always imagined, then you have to work for it.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe. Today we're talking with Amberlee Lago. Boy, she's got a story of resilience. Her platform, True Grit and Grace, it is her book and her podcast, and it is just her entire life philosophy. She just has astounding resilience, and she's inspired a message that she's so passionate about sharing. She is a sweetheart who has endured an incredible motorcycle accident. She talks about that. She talks about what she's overcome, how she teaches these things to her children and her coaching clients. She has masterminds, a Facebook group, all sorts of great places to find her. She's been on the NBC Today Show, The Doctor's Hallmark. She's in all sorts of magazines, USA Today, Health Magazine. She is truly inspiring and really such a lovely person. And I hope that you enjoy as much as we did.
18 Summers Tribe, we're here with Amberlee. So good to see you again.
It is so awesome to see y'all. Thank you. I've been looking forward to talking with you. I just enjoy every time I get to connect with you. So thank you for having me.
You're sweet. Very much likewise.
Yeah, and Jamie's like, we're interviewing Amberlee tomorrow. Remember, we got to get ready. And I'm like, oh, the cool story lady. That's what I think.
It's funny. I was like, remember, you really liked her.
I was like, yes, I did.
He always likes
certain
people.
Stories stick out. Though, yeah. And your story definitely stuck out. So we were excited. Plus, we enjoyed our time with you. So, mm-hmm. Could we start with telling us a little bit about yourself and some of your story? And I know we'll get into some other big subjects.
Yes. Well, thank you. Oh my goodness. I loved connecting with y'all. And first of all, big shout out to Tim Story, because he's the one that was like, you guys have to meet. Yeah. And, I was like, I definitely have to meet. Joseph sent an email and I was like, yeah, I want to meet anybody that he says is you've got to meet them. I'm like, I know they're awesome people. And we instantly hit it off. But yeah, I am back in Texas now. Mm-hmm. I grew up here, but I lived in California for 31 years. I pursued my dreams as a professional dancer out there, and I danced and traveled the world dancing and had a big booming fitness career that, had trainers that worked for me. And I used to also teach people how to become a trainer. So I prepared them for the certification course. And I had such an active lifestyle and was sponsored by Nike.
Wow. I know you're so fit and active, and you had such a big life change.
Oh my goodness. Huge life change. And I think that so many of us have had huge life changes in the past couple of years. And I had a life change in every way. It was physically, mentally, financially. I was on my motorcycle coming home from work and I got hit by an SUV and found myself lying in the street, femoral artery severed, blood everywhere. And thinking back to that moment, and I've had people ask me, they're like, well, do you remember it? And I actually remember every single moment, every detail, what it smelled like, what it felt like, what I could see. And I remember laying in the street and I started screaming out some cuss words. And my first thought was, oh, my Methodist mama wouldn't be proud of that. And then I was thinking, oh my gosh, this can't be good. I looked down at my leg that was crumbled into pieces. And I felt like my leggings were the only thing kind of holding my leg on place. And I didn't want to let go of my leg because I was afraid that my leg was going to fall off of my body. And I was telling people, call 911. Well, I believe in divine timing. And the paramedics were actually down the street at the Coffee Bean. They started running towards me before they even got the call. I have a guardian angel. This guy came up and he made a tourniquet around my leg, which he saved my life because I could have bled out there right on the street. He put his belt around my leg, rushed to the hospital. And when I got to the ER, I was like, wow, like the ER was full of cops. And my husband was a lieutenant commander with a highway patrol, and news travels fast in the police force. And there were so many friends and family cops there. And I heard this crying, this wailing. And I was like, what is that? And I look, it was my husband. And I had never, he's a big, strong man. He's a first responder. I'd never seen him cry. Mm. And I was like, oh my gosh, I might be dying. And I screamed across the ER, honey, get over here. I need you to be strong for me. And he came over and he held my hand. And that's the last thing I remember before they put me in induced coma. And I woke up from a coma. And that's when I learned, they said, well, I'm sorry, there's not much we can do for you. We're going to have to amputate your leg. You only have a 1% chance of saving your leg.
And you said, hold my beer.
Well, you know what? Do you know my husband to this day, he'll still say, you have two legs because of me. Because they wanted to amputate when I was in a coma. And he's like, no, that's going to be up to my wife. I want that to be her decision. So I want her to wake up out of a coma and you let her make that decision. Well, when they told me I had a 1% chance, my thought was, well, there's still a chance. Let's find a doctor that's willing to take that chance with me. And let me tell y'all, that took months in the hospital. It ended up being 34 surgeries and thousands of hours of excruciating physical therapy, but they saved my leg. That was really the easy part. The hard part was when you get out of the hospital and you're into, you know, I was in a hospital bed in the middle of our living room. My husband having to adjust to, he was the caretaker, plus he was working full time. We had a 2-year-old plus a daughter that was going into high school. And I was suddenly the main breadwinner and I'm out of work. We had $2.9 million worth of medical expenses. I had lost my confidence. I was a mess, scarred up from my hip all the way down. And it really was a lot. Then I was diagnosed with complex regional pain syndrome, which is a nerve disease where there's no known cure. And so that really was my rock bottom when I was diagnosed with that. Because as an athlete, you're thinking, okay, well, you recover, you get through injuries, you just recover, you work hard, you get back. Well, to find out that I was diagnosed as a result to this injury, that I had a nerve disease that was never going to get better. At first, it was devastating, but I think that hitting rock bottom and being able to climb out of that darkness, pain has been my biggest teacher, and I've learned a lot of lessons along the way. And that's why I'm so passionate about sharing with others, because, I mean, we all go, pain is pain. And I pray that anybody listening never gets hit by an SUV, but I feel like a lot of people in the past year may have been hit with a lot of hardship, may have been hit with a lot of change, may have been hit with relationship struggles or how your health, those struggles. And so I really am passionate about sharing my message, because at one point I was down and out. And if I had one person, I think all it takes is one person to believe in you a little bit, one person to love you through it. That's all it takes. Like, I had that 1% chance and I hung on to that. It's all it takes is somebody believing in us sometimes before we can believe in ourselves and move forward.
For sure. What was your number one lesson through all this with, in relation to your husband and your children? Because I know you are in this just state of bottom and unknowns and fear and, I mean, catastrophe really and truly. And that is the hardest, most complicated place to be in, and to feel helpless. It's also super difficult for those who love you to watch that and to not know how to help. I'm certain you have some incredible insights on some things that you learned in those dynamics.
Oh, yeah, that is such a great question. I mean, and my whole life, I had been so strong and so like, I didn't need help. I was going to do it on my own. And I was like, I'd never asked for help. And I think the thing that helped me the most, the biggest change, was asking for help. And that really saved my life, actually. I mean, I got to a point where I was trying all these different things for pain. And it's hard for somebody that loves you to see you in that much pain and they can't do anything about it. They feel helpless themselves. And so I was doing radical treatments from ketamine infusions to spinal stimulators to spinal blocks to spinal radio frequency, which one of the side effects is you can be paralyzed. But I was like, okay, I'll take that chance. If you get me out of pain, let's take that chance. Well, nothing was working and I started drinking. I was never a drinker. I was never a partier. And I started drinking and I remember thinking, well, this isn't the healthiest thing to do, but if this is what's going to ease my pain a little bit, then maybe this is what I'm going to have to do. One thing, one glass led to another. And before I knew it, I was dependent on drinking to try to cope with the pain. And it wasn't until I was at my darkest place where I was actually thinking to myself, my husband does not deserve this. He can find a better wife. He can find somebody that would be a better mom. My kids don't deserve this. And I thought, no, I want to be there. There was that little glimmer of hope, 100%. That little glimmer that made me reach out for help and admit that, hey, I'm in a lot of pain. I got a problem. I need help. And I think a lot of us do this where we try to suck it up. We try to keep pushing through. We try to hustle and we try to stuff it down. And whether we are doing that by drinking too much, shopping too much, scrolling through social media too much, whatever it is too much, instead of dealing with that pain, pain demands to be heard. And once we let those feelings rise to the surface, then we can start to deal with them and strengthen our relationships. And it was the moment when I started to ask for help and admit that I had a problem and I was hurting that changed my life. And it really built more meaningful connections between family, between my husband. And I think that when you go through any hardship, any health crisis or any crisis at all, it can either tear you apart or can you bring you closer together. And I think the key to that is communication and it's asking for help, being willing to be vulnerable, accepting that help. And in fact, you know, right before we got on this call, I just sent my husband a message because he knows I'm back to back Zooms today. And he sent me a message. He said, don't forget you have a Thai salad in the fridge. Little things like that. I just messaged him and I was like, don't forget you're the best. I love you so much. You know, because it's those little things like that he helps me in that way. I will tell y'all, I remember the first time I was able to walk on my crutches. It was a big goal of mine to walk on crutches down to the Starbucks, was a block away. I was so happy that I was able to stand up long enough to go on crutches. And I had to prop my leg up on a chair. And this guy that I used to work with, he walked around the corner and he saw me and he's like, dang, what happened to you? And I said, oh, I got hit by an SUV on my motorcycle. He said, oh, I'm glad I didn't marry you. I would have divorced you. Oh. And I said, well, I'm glad I never went on a first date with you. Yeah. But I'm like, the fact that my husband stuck by my side, was at the hospital every single day. He loved me until I could love myself is huge. But I think so much of that we've learned to communicate. I've learned to ask for help and accept help. And I've also learned how to really appreciate him and all he does. And I think that is a lot when you feel appreciated. You know, like it makes me feel appreciated that he even left a salad for me in the fridge. You know what I mean? Absolutely. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I really appreciate that because I just wonder, and as we've all dealt through things, various things in our life, and our children always take away big nuggets from it, or our spouse, those that are supporting us. You know, I remember one thing that I learned through hard times was I was really encouraging the boys one day. Someone was crying and I'm like, it's okay to cry. Everybody cries. And I said, you don't ever cry. I thought, oh, you know, the same way that you're saying, you never asked for help. And then you were forced to ask for help and it completely changed your relationship. So I just think it's powerful to acknowledge that sometimes when these things happen.
Well, can I just brag on my kids real quick?
Yes, please do. Absolutely.
Well, this is like, Okay. So I really wanted to be an example of resilience. I wanted to be an example of a woman who was the victor of her life and not a victim. And I did not want to teach my children that victim mentality or mindset. I mean, it's okay to have a pity party. We all have hard times, but don't stay there. And I have to say, something that meant so much is, so my daughter was awarded, my youngest daughter was 13 when she was awarded at school. They award best attendance, most athleticism, most school pride. Well, she got the award for most empathy. Aww. And I thought, oh my goodness, that made me so proud. My oldest daughter, she's in Yale. She's in Connecticut. She's going to school at Yale. She's studying medicine. And I asked her, I said, well, Savannah, what made you want to go into medicine? And she said, well, Mom, you did. All those surgeries and all that you battle with this nerve disease, she goes, I want to find a cure. And so I went to visit her, and she's got her whole kitchen as a whiteboard, and it looks like a chemistry class. I mean, it's foreign. I don't recognize it. But she has all these notes on her wall, and she's determined, like, she wants to find a cure, and not just for CRPS, but she's going to Africa. Next month, she applied for a grant. She got the grant, and she's going to Africa to study how the effects of chemo and all kinds of other stuff that I don't even understand. But I'm just saying, like, that something that can be so tragic and at the moment seems so devastating, there are so many blessings that come out of that. And now my youngest daughter, that girl, she's a horseback rider, and she has been thrown off that horse, and she gets right back on. And, you know, she just did a competition last month, and she got thrown off her horse. And, you know, she didn't even get up and take time to dust the dirt off. She just got right back up on that horse. And it's like, she has learned to cry and express her feelings, but she is also, and give herself grace, but she has also learned, like, if you want anything in life, if you want to have the life that you've always imagined, then you have to work for it.
Yeah. And you talk a lot about grit. It's funny you bring up that word, because grit is a big value for you, right? And that's something that you teach a lot of people about.
Yeah. You know what? There's not many things I can say I'm good at, but I'm real good at grit. And sometimes to where it gets me in trouble. Since I was a kid, I was never the smartest. I was never the fastest. I was never the most talented dancer, but I worked the hardest. And so to make company, I took more dance classes than anybody else. I made company. Even with my podcast, I'm still new. Y'all, I just bought my first computer 5 years ago. Technology is still new for me. I have a top 1% podcast. That's only, and I'm so grateful that y'all are going to be on the show soon. Yeah. I have y'all on the show. But it's top 1% only because I have had the grit to be persistent to release an episode every single week.
Yeah, that's great.
And now I know your book is True Grit and Grace. What's the name of your podcast so everyone can follow?
True Grit and Grace.
As well. Okay. Yeah. I know that's the name of your book. For some reason,
I kept it simple. I made it simple.
The podcast had a different title. Maybe it has like a subtitle that I got hooked on or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the same. You know, I kept trying to think of, like, oh, what would it be? What would it be? And I'm like, I remember when I was writing my book, I wrote my whole book and I didn't know the name of, couldn't figure out the name. And my editor was like, don't worry about it. You'll hear it when you hear it, or it comes to you, you'll know it. And I remember I was going to the barn and I walked up, and that day on social media, I had just done a post about the non-union of my leg finally grew together. So I had about a 2-inch non-union with a bone, and they were thinking they were going to have to do a bone graft with my hip. And it took 2 years, but it finally grew back together. And I'd posted on social media, like, woohoo, my bone finally grew back together. But the x-ray looks kind of crazy. Like, there's lots of screws and broken metal and a rod and all kinds of stuff. And one of the moms said, wow, Amberly, I had no idea that that's what your leg looked like. She goes, girl, you've got true grit and grace. And I said, can I use that for my title for my book? She goes, you're welcome. And so that's how I found the name of my book. I was like, yes, that's it, because it's the grit to persevere, But it's also the grace that I've learned along the way, the grace of God, asking God to come in and really be by my side in everything that I do, but also the grace that we give ourselves and others along the way and to do things with kindness.
Mm, yeah. That's so good.
And so what would you tell people who are wanting to say, man, I need to develop some grit? What is the first step to developing grit? For some, it seems impossible, which I don't believe, but people out there believe.
You know what? I think it's really important to, for me, I really had to focus on my vision and my purpose. I needed a purpose. I needed to do things that made me feel good. And so even when I was in the hospital bed, I had one of the trainers from the gym bring me some dumbbells, and the doctors thought I was crazy because I was like, I need a pull-up bar installed over my bed because I could not get up. I couldn't even get up to use the bathroom, but I was like, but I need to be able to pull myself up, to keep my body strong, keep my upper body strong. Now, I wasn't doing that just to get muscles or anything like that. I was doing that because I knew it would make me feel better. So I think it's important for people to think about, well, what brings them joy? What makes you feel good? And then what is the most important thing to you? And for me, the most important thing to me was I wanted to be able to get up and chase after my kids and be a mom. And I wanted to be able to be that wife to my husband, the lady that he married. And I could not wait to get out of the hospital to train clients again. And so I focused on doing everything I could every day, which some days wasn't much, but everything, even I think a lot of times people get focused on the big picture, like how to build grit. I want to run a marathon. If I would have thought about running a marathon when I was stuck in that hospital bed, I'd probably still be in the hospital bed. I set these small attainable goals that I knew that I could achieve. And one thing, a couple of things that really helped me along the way, because grit was important and it was important to eat the healthiest that I could eat, to try to sleep. Even now I wear this ring that monitors like how much REM sleep I'm getting, how much deep sleep I'm getting. And I've made it like a business strategy to try to get sleep and recovery. Because I was like, oh, resting is for quitters. And I'm like, no, resting is a business strategy. And so I've shifted that. But things that helped me along the way, because it's not always easy to have grit, is to think about why. Like, not the how you're going to do it, but why you're going to do it. Because for me, I've got self-doubt that creeps in still today. I've got limiting beliefs. I can be so hard on myself. My mom always tells me I'm my own worst critic. But if I focus on, well, it's not necessarily about me, but it's why I want to do it. Like when I was writing my book, I was like, who am I to write a book? I don't even own a computer. I'm the fitness girl. I don't have a college education. Who cares about my story? But when I focused on, no, if I can give hope and inspiration to just one person, dang it, I'm going to finish this book. I'm going to write this book because somebody out there needs hope, needs inspiration. And I wrote the book that kept me going. And it's still some days, it's hard. You know, it's not easy being an entrepreneur. You got crazy hours a lot of times, but I focus on why I'm doing it. And I don't rely on motivation because I'm not always motivated. And a lot of people think, oh, well, you're just motivated. Nope, I'm not always motivated. I rely on healthy habits. And so I think that healthy habits in place, when you're feeling down, you've already got these healthy habits, have smart feet that will, I say smart feet that will get me to a meeting, a recovery meeting, get me to the gym, put it in my schedule. I'm still old school and I've got this book, like my calendar that's got highlighted, like when I work out, when I'm being of service, when I'm coaching a client, when I'm recording podcasts. Because if I don't make that time in my schedule, then somebody else will make my schedule for me. So I think it's important to get those healthy habits in place, write it down so you follow through with it.
Isn't it kind of funny? I mean, outside in, if it was me and I'm like, hey, Amberly, I'm going to tell you my story. Got crushed by an SUV. I had a 1% chance of my leg being saved. I endured dozens and dozens of surgeries and overcame millions of dollars in medical debt and then built the book and the podcast to a top 1%, you'd be going, wow, that's an incredible story. But I'm sitting here listening to it and we doubt ourselves like, oh yeah, but how's that going to help anyone? Me talking about overcoming a 1% chance of keeping my leg. And you know what I mean? We are our own worst enemy. And so what is the coaching you give to your clients, which is tough because we all got to do it for ourselves, but it's always easier to give it to others. What is the coaching you give to stop doubting? Because I can hear your story and I'm going, isn't that amazing that even someone like you who overcame this 1%
could doubt yourself,
but we all do it.
Well, you know, I just had one of my clients just flew out. She just went to Greece and she messaged me and she's like, I'm really nervous. I'm feeling really anxious. And I said, I'm going to give you some advice that you gave me a long time ago. I said, I was about to go walk onto the TEDx stage and stand in the middle of that infamous red circle. It was the first time I ever gave a big talk in front of, and there was 2,500 people there.
Wow.
I was the only one without a PhD. So talk about limiting beliefs.
Wow.
Something that changed it for me was, so I was talking to the curator and I said, hey, you know, I just saw the website and the media that came up and my husband noticed that I'm the only one that doesn't have a bunch of initials after my name, like the only one that doesn't have a PhD. I'm not trying to promote my book, but is there any way we could at least say like I'm an author or something like that? And she goes, are you feeling less than because you don't have a PhD? And I'm like, well, kind of. And she goes, let me tell you something. You have a PhD in heart. And that's why we want you at our conference. We want you to speak on the TEDx because you have a PhD in heart. That really shifted it for me. And so I think that we all have a PhD in heart. We all have a story to tell. And so when my client told me years ago, when I went to go on that TEDx stage and I was so nervous, I said, I'm so nervous. And she said, Amberly, you made it through 34 surgeries. I think you can go stand on a stage and talk. And so now when she messaged me that she was nervous, I told her, I said, I'm going to give you the advice you gave me. What's the hardest thing you've ever overcome? You think about that and you overcame that. You can get on a plane and fly to Greece. Yeah. I said, and switch that nervous to excitement. And so with the self-limiting beliefs, I think the only thing that, well, one of the things that really helps me the most is thinking about the hardest thing I've ever overcome, but also taking action and holding yourself accountable. And that starts with me from the moment I wake up in the morning. So I set my alarm for 5. If I get up at 5, I'm like, whoop, that's one notch for believing in me, trusting in me, go team Amberly, you're confident. If I'm pushing snooze, I'm like, that's every time. It's like, you're not doing what you said you're going to do. You're slacking off. It's like, it's building up the limiting beliefs, that negative talk. And so I'm big on sticky notes. When I set sticky notes with like little things that I'm going to do, and they're things that I know I can do, but I do it and I love crossing stuff off. I got it done, did that. But I think that taking action, whether you're scared or you're nervous or you're doubting yourself, if you take that action step, it's going to build your confidence. And so set those good habits in place and then take action, because man, that's the only thing that would help me when I was scared to death to do that talk is I would go upstairs and I would pace back and forth in my office and I would practice my talk. Mm-hmm. And being prepared like that, when you finally get to whatever you're doing, whatever big endeavor you're striving to achieve, you're going to be prepared and you're going to have that confidence to go after it.
Yeah. Amberly, I have one more question for you, because usually we end our podcast with reflection on what you would share with others is like your wisdom, which I feel like you just answered that question. So I get to ask a bonus question. How do you foster these incredible lessons and pieces of yourself in your children? How are you fostering grit and grace in those girls?
That's such a great question. Well, I think that the best thing that we can do as a parent, I mean, is set an example, is not just saying to do something, but be that example for them. And I think that anything as small as like the manners that you have when you go out to a restaurant, you know, I used to be a waitress and I'm so like, you say thank you, you say please, you tip big because I waited tables for so long. And it's nice to see how my girls go to a restaurant and they have good manners with everybody and anybody in their plight. That means a lot to me. But I think it's setting that example by actually having the integrity and following through and doing what you say you're going to do and being there to communicate with your kids. I think that's probably the thing that's had the biggest difference in them is they all, I have to say, you know, my youngest daughter, especially, she has seen so much between surgeries and my husband's had a surgery. And then she threw the softball that hit me in the face and my nose bleeding. And she's now to the point where she kind of like sees hard stuff and she kind of we use humor a lot. We've used humor to get through a lot of hardship because sometimes when you feel like crying, you just laugh. So I don't know how healthy that is though. Cause I'm like, I feel like you should be crying right now and you're laughing, but I don't know if that's because she's seen so much, but I constantly
know.
Keeping a sense of humor, I think, is extremely powerful attribute to hard times.
But I was saying, yeah, it is a thing. There's like, I've looked it up. I'm an awkward laugher. So we have.
Is that really? Because I really think that my daughter is. She's an awkward laugher. Really.
When your nervous system gets overloaded and doesn't know what to do, it will come out in laughter.
That's what she does.
Yes. So this was a problem in our relationship in the beginning.
Really? Was it really?
Something would happen and I would like, someone would get hurt and I would laugh. And
that's what she does.
What the hell is wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this feeling. But yeah, I'm an awkward laugh for your daughter. I mean, it's a thing.
She is. She is. And I'm like, I think maybe we need to go to therapy because this is not right that I just broke my toe and you think it's hysterical. Yeah. But you know what? It makes me laugh. Like when I got hit in the face with a baseball and I've got blood coming out my nose and she's laughing, it made me laugh. So
I was about to say, I don't think you and I should play softball with your daughter and Jamie because there'd be all this blood and laughing and you and I holding our faces.
Yeah. It's not a lack of kindness. It's
no,
just like awkwardness.
No, I'm sure your daughter's just as kind. It's just, yes, but
it is funny. Well, I don't want to keep you anymore, but I so appreciate having you here. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, your grace. Tell us where our listeners can find more about you.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. Well, you know, I was thinking about, well, what can I give to your audience? Because it's one thing to hear a story, but I'm like, what can I give them? Yeah. And so I have like a 5-part, it's called PACER, and it's a playbook that I've developed on how to tap into your resilience. And it's what I use every single day to get through pain, hardship, sadness, any anxiety. And if you just text the word GRIT, G-R-I-T, to 818-214-7378, you'll get that free download. But it's also me. So just let me know you heard our conversation on the podcast because I love connecting. And AmberlyLago.com is where you can find my podcast, book, mastermind, all the other good downloadable free gratitude journal. So all that good stuff. But I just appreciate y'all. I just love talking to you. And I feel so grateful to get to be on your show. And I just want to thank you so much.
Likewise. Thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure. You are an inspiration and a little ray of sunshine. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
You too.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.